The first reboot episode of the Andres Segovia Show, and I got with me Travis. What's up, Travis? Say hi to the world.
Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Because we were talking about this before we went live, right? Talk about the how some training is diverted. There's a Marine friend of mine who posted something. I couldn't help it because I know that's like armed forces humor. It says the meme was. Due to presidential decree or whatever, all Air Force operators boot camps are not online.
Well, in the armed forces role, that unfortunately would be a joke that the Army and the Marines would make about the Air Force anyway, but it's all right, because you know what? They don't take offense to it because they know they have the better accommodations, they have the better facilities, the better, so you know what?
Yeah. Sorry to all my Air Force peeps out there, but I had to throw that one out there. That was too funny. I just saw it like an hour ago. There's so much humor about that going around. Just to keep everything a little lively, no pun intended, especially since in Italy, like people singing to each other out there because they live in close quarters. But in my culture, there's like this boogeyman called La Llorona, like the crier or whatever. Like it's like a crying nun or whatever it is. I don't really know too much about it. I just know that it's like a Bloody Mary type thing. But I don't remember what the meme was saying. Yeah. Like put a toilet paper outside your house to keep away La Corona. Oh man, people are finding ways to keep themselves entertained at this time, and that's kind of why, like, you know what? Let's launch the webcam and do this, because you heard about the film Contagion, like rising to like the most watched thing online right now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've seen a number of people post it on their Facebook saying that they were watching it this weekend. It's become a thing, like, to let everybody know that you are watching it. I'm more of a Dawn of the Dead type guy, but you know, each his own.
I know, it's like the movie sucked then, that's why I didn't watch it, and now it's like, oh my gosh. And like, and you know what's funny, I think the unintended Contagion movie is Rise of the Planet of the Apes, the whole reboot thing. Did you see that one?
I have not. I've seen most of the originals, I think, but after I saw the Tim Burton remake, I kind of checked out of that market. I know they got better after that, but it spoiled it for me, so I just checked out after that one.
So I totally agree with you, but Rise of the Planet of the Apes did something that I didn't think was possible. I had my skepticism, like, yeah, you know what, and it's fine, I go check it out. James Franco's being serious, so this might actually be good.
You know, that's a rare thing in its own right, so.
Yeah, then when I watched it, I'm like, dude, this movie's good. So, I'm going to throw a spoiler alert out here for people that haven't seen it. I mean, you haven't. I mean, the sequel spoiled it on its own, the trailers. But there's this pharmaceutical company that's trying to find a cure for Alzheimer's, and they're experimenting on apes because we're primates. So, they were seeing some improvements with restoring and reconstructing brain tissue. So that's kind of how it was working out. And they were trying to use it on humans. Like, okay, experimentation is probably working. But one of the side effects was that apes were becoming smarter. And the main ape is Caesar, played by Andy Serkis, overdue for motion capture best actor award. Oh my goodness, man, he sold that one. I'm like, dude. This is not a guy in an ape costume. This is a dude just moving around with motion capture stuff on him. Anyway, he starts communicating via sign language and all that. And then eventually, like along the storyline, we find out that, he finds out the mistreatment of the animals and tries to break them free. But before doing so, unleashes the nerve gas that gas into the animal pens as they all become smarter and start like breaking free. And this happens outside San Francisco, I think. So they take refuge in the big redwoods. One of the downsides about that drug that they were testing is that it's good for primates, but deadly to humans. So that was a plot twist, because there's one guy that worked in the facility that ended up getting this aerosol spray into his face, and he had to go home because he was sick. And when he was getting really, really sick, he went to James Franco's house to tell him, like, you know, he's really sick, and he wanted to tell him that, like, maybe something's wrong with the drug. And it so happens that James Franco's annoying neighbor that's always pestering him, it comes over to, like, shoo this guy away. So then this the infected guy sneezes on the neighbor, He's like, the F, dude. So then, anyway, the infected dude ends up leaving and eventually dies. The end credit scene is the scene that should spook the hell out of everybody that's living today trying to survive coronavirus. Because in the end, we see, like, the camera just on the floor. Little drop of blood hits the floor. Camera pans up, and we see that neighbor that's been annoying this whole time. He's infected with whatever that was, and he's a pilot. So that he's walking towards his plane he's going to fly. So the end sequence montage, well, it's not even a montage. It's just like the entire end credit scene because the credits are rolling. It's one plane going to one port, and then the plane's going to these ports, and then those planes going to those ports and going elsewhere, wiping out humanity because the disease is spreading everywhere. That's the contagion you should be afraid of, because that's why we are travel banned, because that's how crazy it can be.
Previewing our modern dilemma on whether to ban both international and domestic travel.
Well, yeah, I think the UK is on that list already if they haven't been put yet.
I think they are. Feel like I'm a half step behind the news sometimes, but I want to say that's a done deal. They're already mulling over domestic travel, which in some ways is out of step itself, considering I think most people have sort of self-quarantined themselves from using domestic travel. They've either delayed trips, canceled things, businesses and conferences already canceled things. Most of the infected states, New York, Washington, California, most event organizers have already pushed things out 4 to 6 months. Locally, UC Irvine just canceled their graduation ceremony, which isn't even until June.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about those. Yeah, because as they're learning more, they're finding out that the contagion period is probably not just 2 weeks. It's probably as much as 37 days. So they're expanding things as they learn and go about. And that's just it. Like, what survival movies can people watch? Forget the apocalyptic movies. I want to talk about some of them, but what survival movies can people look to and say, like, you know what? I can't make the most of this. Kind of like sciencing the it out of it, as Matt Damon says in The Martian, right? Capital in space.
It's not really a movie, but I was going back. Did you ever read Stephen King's The Stand?
The Stand? No,
yeah, I heard they made about it into it a terrible TV miniseries that I recommend you don't watch. It was quite bad. Like a lot of his movies, that get, or books, that get turned into miniseries. But the book was incredible. It's basically this kind of exact scenario. It's a lab outbreak kind of thing, but it's basically how it eventually goes and wipes out most of the United States until there's kind of just these different groups or kind of bands across the America that have to link up. And it's basically a prequel to like The Walking Dead. You know, but without zombies, but basically it's what the Walking Dead ended up being, except for more from a virus perspective.
Did you ever see 28 Days Later with Cillian Murphy?
Which one is that, the sequel, or is that the first one?
That's the first one.
Yes.
Or he was in the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one that changed the zombie genre, because like, oh my gosh, there's fast zombies. Like, well, technically they're not even zombies. They're just people.
They're more like, they called them what? Ragers or berserkers, or they had some term for them, because they weren't zombies in the movie, because it wasn't they hadn't died, and they never established that the people were dead. They were just infected.
Exactly. And that's right. They never died, and they weren't even eating human flesh. They were like just raging out, biting and attacking people, and that's how the virus spread like crazy.
Yeah, there's a creepy scene in the movie where I think they're on the road and there's like a father daughter, and the father accidentally looks up and there's a dead body above him, and a single drop of blood accidentally lands in his eyeball, and he gets infected. Because that for some reason that scene always stuck with me. It was well
yes,
done.
Yes, that's a very powerful scene. Brendan Gleeson really acted the it out of that one. Like, yes. Oh man, that was good. No, but I remember a friend of mine who just loved his horror films, and I never cared for them, but she was out in Taiwan at the time, and we're communicating back and forth, and like, hey, you're up like really late for your time, what are you doing up? Because we're MSN chatting back then, back in the day. She said,
AOL.
No, not AOL. She's like, oh, I just finished watching 28 Weeks Later. I'm like, oh, how was it? She's like, oh, it was terrifying. So I'm like, wow, something actually scared you for once. So I checked it out eventually. I'm like, all right, fine. You got that scared. I'm curious about this. So I checked
amazing
it out.
Amazing opening scene. Probably one of the greatest opening scene. I don't care what the rest of the movie, but you have to watch it simply for that opening scene where that father makes that choice, and he's looking at his family standing at the door of the other room, and he sees them coming in from the other side, and that horrible moment where he leaves his family. That entire scene is worth it by on its own.
Oh yeah, man. Oh my goodness. Robert Carlyle, I think his name is.
Yes, yeah. From Trainspotting. If you know your foreign cinema.
Ewan McGregor's in that one too, isn't he?
Yes, that was his. That was his breakout role.
Yeah, didn't they just do a sequel to that? But anyway,
yes.
Yeah, but that moment, oh my goodness, that was so good. I think especially the not so much a tracking shot, but like a fixed shot of him running towards the river, and those just like the horde just coming over the
hill,
and just like almost on him, like holy smokes, dude! So like, man, those are sprinters to be sure. But I think that the scene that she referred to. And I was telling my wife over the weekend, like, honey, we're in Sam's Club. You see all these people here? Imagine the La Corona's here. And it would be like this scene from 28 Weeks Later, where the boy lets in the infected person into the place where everybody's being quarantined, and they just spraying like crazy because there's nowhere to go. It's like, oh, snap, dude. That's like, that was freaky. That moment right there was freaky. I'm like, yeah, I can see that totally happening. Walking Dead's not even anything I recommend to anybody watching right now. If you want to freak yourself out with something like a contagion, I do recommend 28 Days Later and Weeks Later. And hold your loved ones close because you might need a cuddle.
Yeah.
Or distance, sure. Whatever, one or the other.
I haven't seen that. That might be one I have to revisit. I think I saw it when it first came out, and I don't think I've ever seen it since.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Long time ago. What about have you seen that Contagion movie, by the way? I never saw it.
You know, I have not. I have so many things on my watch list that's just not high enough up right now to crack the my Amazon watch list. So, and you know, really, I'm trying not to watch those kind of things and I don't know. You watch one of those and then you walk into a store here and you see the lines going out and you see people getting angry and people are kind of shouting up and down the aisles. And you're like, I don't think you need a virus for people to go crazy like in 20 days. Like they're already about there by themselves, ready to kind of go berserk. That happened this morning. There was a guy shouting up and down one of the aisles, which was a sort of surreal scene because he was one of the people, he had a mask on, but he was given some kind of speech about that America was still in good hands and not panic, but he was saying it loud and just walking up and down the aisle and no one was paying attention to him. And it was, and the line to get TP on the blocked off aisle, was practically snaking out the door. The entire thing was very, surreal.
And I said I was going to come back to that. So for those of you that want toilet paper, good news, they're still available in mass, those copies of the novel trying to explain the Star Wars Rise of Skywalker nonsense. So it's retconning the movie that retconned the trilogy. So by all means, you need toilet paper. There's plenty of those copies there. And a lot of the Geeks and Gamer fans are doing the same.
I did see a meme on Facebook that I think you would appreciate. It was something like that, that I still found a roll of toilet paper. And it was like a picture of like Hillary Clinton's biography or something like that. I figured that one was up your alley. But
more about that Rise of Skywalker nonsense. Dude, how do you retcon a movie that retconned a trilogy? By bringing out a book trying to explain the movie that everybody hated. Wow. Way to go, Disney. Congratulations.
Hey, 20 years from now, when people finally get it, and it's looked upon favorably in hindsight, sometimes, movies are ahead of the curve. They need time. They need time for the fan base to...
No, and I'm going to stay here for everybody just so you can hear it. Rian Johnson's dead to me. I don't care what he did.
Well, I think that's a little severe. Dude, he is the one that did Brick, right? Because I saw, I think that was his first movie. I saw it when it came out, and I remember like, Looper? I don't know who this guy is, but that movie was amazing for what it was, the budget. What's that kid's name? Who then Joseph he went on? Levitt. Yes, who I didn't even know at the time. I was just like, man, and he was the wrong director to pick. I get it. You try to pick someone that he's going to bring something new to the table, but then guys like that, they're not really interested in pre-established stuff. They want to go in, they want to make their own movie, do all the stuff, and they're not the right kinds of people to pick to do something like that.
Actually, this might actually take us off a whole other tangent, which I have to save for another time, but the thing is, it wasn't so much that. That's what we wanted in Star Wars. We needed new territory. The thing is, Rian Johnson, at the behest of the current president of Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy, wanted to undo all the patriarchal, misogynistic stuff that Star Wars was. So that's why they were retconning every character. Well, retconning the stories, destroying every character, destroying Luke Skywalker because he was the hero, trying to prop up a female character that was a Mary Sue that had all the powers in the world, that knew the ships of Han Solo better than Han Solo himself, and she's never been in it, but she somehow knew it better than he did. I'm like, the hell's going on here? And she has more knowledge of the Force than Yoda himself. Like, who the hell is this and who taught her that? That's why with all this, like, she's Palpatine's daughter. And then the novel says, actually, she's not Palpatine's daughter. She's the granddaughter. Oh, no, she's the daughter of a failed clone. What the hell are you talking about, dude? They had zero plan. Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams didn't talk. And J.J. Abrams is the one who set the foundation. I had my concerns, too. I'm like, dude, it's freaking J.J. Abrams. He knows how to make things look flashy. He's a horrible continuity storyteller and finisher. He never finishes anything he touches. So I'm like, this guy is just gonna, if he does it right, he could do something great. You know, I enjoyed Star Trek, but I also knew this was Star Wars. This was not a Star Trek movie.
No, they're two entirely different.
So I thought that was like his audition for Star Wars. I'm like, oh, look, there it is, Star Wars. He ended up getting it like 4 years later or whatever that was. But we saw what happened. Like, dude, stop touching everything you do. Like Mission Impossible 3, I actually enjoyed it for what it was, but I'm the first one to tell you, it's like, what the hell? I'm watching True Lies? Like, that's the first thing I said. It's an entire brief sequence that's like, dude, am I watching the wrong movie here? It's kind of like how you felt with the Joker.
But history repeats itself. If you remember back in the original trilogy, when it came to Return of the Jedi, you probably know this, they offered their first choice for director for that movie was David Lynch.
Yes, he was doing good at the time, wasn't he?
Imagine David Lynch with Ewoks and all that kind of, and David Lynch turned it down saying, I appreciate the offer, I think you have the wrong person for this time. See, he was smart enough to go, this is not for me. You think, this is weird and strange. You think I'm weird and strange. It'll be a perfect marriage. Trust me, it's not, whatever you're thinking. So he was smart enough to walk away. But Rian Johnson, not so much.
Yeah.
So, but they've tried this before. Then we'll get someone that doesn't make any sense to direct one of these and bring something new to it. And sure enough, they eventually did. And I appreciate that he tried some new things. In it. I don't think if you broke it down, probably not all of the ideas in there were bad. I think once people realized they didn't like it, everything became bad. It had some potential, but he would have had to have a producer or something work with him to kind of steer the ship and go, you need to stay within the boundaries here and here. And it could have worked. It probably could have been something that was different, maybe even divided the fans a little bit, but been unique and faithful to the material.
I would have loved faithfulness to the material, and at least, like, dude, at least some kind of character growth instead of actual character destruction of every character that was just introduced to. But it was an awful mess. So for those of you that do want to get scared but don't want to be like completely ruined in your life, don't watch Star Wars. Not the new ones, at least. Disney ruined it. We're talking about things that can entertain you while scaring you at the same time, dude. There's this thing on Netflix called The Kingdom. I first thought it was like a Chinese thing, but it was actually a Korean thing, and it debuted last year. I watched it. That's the only Korean drama anybody ever can say I volunteered to watch. Oh, Dude, now that's how you breathe new life into a zombie drama. That was good, but it left you in a cliffhanger. It's only six episodes. Like, what the flip? Do we need more of it? So this past weekend, I don't know if it was on purpose, but this past weekend, season two dropped. Just in time for the lockdown. And I just started watching it. It's a good one. But other movies, though. Other movies. Shaun of the Dead. You seen that one?
Yes. In fact, I rewatched that. Maybe like 3 years ago, something like that. Three, four years ago. Actually, very useful movie for how to practically survive the apocalypse, because it's how does the average Joe survive the apocalypse? You know,
can do it, you can do it.
That's right. You know, if a bumbling fool like him can kind of get through it, what was his friend's name? The one that was like Ed? The slob and the
Ed.
Yes. Then you know what? You can band together and get through it too. I think that was the message of
the door.
Oh my gosh.
That's a good one, man.
That broke a lot of ground when that came out. I remember that one quite vividly. I didn't like it, oddly enough, I didn't like it as much as I remembered it when I saw it for the second time, but it was still pretty good.
There's a lot of Easter eggs there because of Joe Wright, I think it is. Oh, dude, I know his last name is Wright. I don't know if his first name is Joe. I know that some of the fans are going to butcher me for this one. Sorry, y'all. I'm not a big fan of the director. Like, he built up a lot of goodwill with the – oh, my goodness. If I get this name wrong, they're really going to kill me. The ice cream flavor's name, Cornelio? I think that's it. Cornelio Trilogy, something like that. That's what that one's called, along with Hot Fuzz and this is the end. At World's End.
Fuzz was probably my favorite if I had to pick one.
That one's up in the air with for me, the toss up between that one and Shaun of the Dead. I enjoy those two considerably, even though I guess the whole parody of all action movies and especially Point Break, like all the trends, like, yeah, so all you guys managed to do all this together. Oh no, those were happy coincidences. Like, what? It's like, we didn't plan any of that out. That just happened. That had nothing to do with the plot line. It's like, oh, well, there goes your investigative prowess. That kind of retcon is good. And Timothy Dalton was in that one, too. So that,
like, that's right. That's right.
He always has this face, you know, because, that was a good one. I really enjoyed that one, too. But that all that goodwill that a lot of fans enjoy is like, oh, man, you got to go watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World then, because he did that one. I watched it. I hated it. I'm like, dude.
You hated Scott Pilgrim?
Yes, because
that was a movie that was ahead of its time.
It was ahead of its time.
It foreshadowed stuff that's like popular now. It bombed at the box office because everyone at the time was kind of like, what's this? Now a lot of what's in there is standard in terms of how they formulate those kinds of movies, different meta things, mixing anime with different scenes and kind of bouncing all over. But at the time, I think people thought it was just kind of an odd mess, and then foreshadowing a lot of what was going to be popular 5 to 7 years from then.
The construction of it was fun. I think what I didn't anticipate was, and I'm going to get into this in some other episodes eventually, for those that do follow Off the Record will know how I sound off on gender identity politics and SJW nonsense. So this one, as you're saying, was ahead of the curve in that. So I didn't expect that much to be thrown at me. I'm like, the flip am I watching? I mean, some of those things were like great gotchas, like the flip, but for a PG-13 movie, I thought it was way too much. I'm like, if it was R, I would let it slip. But this is saying that it's PG-13, and it was just way over the top for me, and I tuned out by then. Like, because I put defensive barriers. I was like, this is way too much for me to handle. So I didn't appreciate that. So I walked into that. So then the next day when I did watch it, my friends were like, hey, did you watch the movie? And they're like, yeah. Even they were like, yeah, sorry, I recommended the movie. So we come from that background where we're more religious conservative, so we were a little bit it came from left field for us, to say the least.
No, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, so I enjoyed Baby Driver. That was okay. Fun.
I've seen half of that. I haven't watched it from beginning to end yet. What I saw was interesting.
It foreshadowed Kevin Spacey's fall. Like, oh my goodness, dude.
Well,
I hope I might have to censor that.
Yes, I that You always wonder what was going on that movie set. Like, I wonder if they knew at the time what was coming with old Spacey there. But
yeah,
poor guy.
What else was there besides? We're talking about Contagion movies for people to watch, right?
I feel like that genre fits a lot of direct-to-video kind of, you know, DVD. You know, it never saw a theater release.
Like a B-movie? Kind of.
Yeah, it's that sort of genre that you find movies within the genre by, you know, it's 2 a.m. and you can't sleep and you happen to be flipping through and HBO's already run through its cycle of, you know, it's already played everything twice and it'll sneak something in there. That's kind of genre that tends to belong to. I'm trying to think.
David
Cronenberg did some movies like this. If you go back to the 70s, he did a movie called Rabid that basically was a precursor to all this, and it's basically kind of the same thing. It's an early 70s Cronenberg movie, and I want to say it's kind of similar premise, something like a virus or something like that, and the main person becomes rabid. It's more like a 28 days later type okay. virus. It just makes them, there's a little bit of a zombie element to it, but they're not dead. It just infects in the way it does in 28 days later, and actually follows kind of a similar script. There's two movies he did in the 70s like that. There's another one called Shivers, which it has two titles. It has like a Canadian title and an American title, but one of them is Shivers, and it's kind of the same I think template. It's some kind of virus that infects people, and I think it causes them to I don't remember, but he did a couple movies in the 70s that were all kind of in that same vein. I want to say the 70s, because after Dawn of the Dead became kind of a big success, there were a number of kind of ripoffs of that, of zombie or zombie-ish movies or some kind of a virus or a plague that hits and causes people to do that. I know Italy, especially a lot of films came out of Italy that kind of copied that. Was it Zombie? That's another famous Italian movie that was like mid-70s. It was like within a year or two of when Dawn of the Dead came out, kind of similar premise.
And speaking of Dawn of the Dead, we can't talk about Contagion without the Grandmaster himself, huh? George
Romero, Night of the Living Dead, still the gold standard for which, you know, it's you know, agree with it or not, it was that how do you combine kind of B-level schlock with political commentary and sort of raise the make a, you know, which really, like I said, a B movie, but make it more avant-garde and kind of mask the fact that it's a B movie at heart. And he kind of started that whole kind of genre. You know, you have $50,000 to $100,000, but you can make your art film and have zombies eating people still, so you can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I think it was genius to film it in black and white. It stood the test of time.
I think he did it because I want to say the black and white film stock was cheaper, so it was a budgetary concern.
Yeah, and that thing works wonders. So I'm not a fan of Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, but it looks like he might be working on a sequel. It's called Army of the Dead. When I first heard that, I'm like, Sam Raimi's revisiting the, oh my goodness. Ash, what is your full
Evil
name,
Dead.
Man? Yeah, but what's his full name, man? Oh.
Does he have a last name in the? Are you asking for his character's name or his real name?
Because they just did the Spike TV did a show about that, Ash versus Evil Dead. So, yeah, whatever, man. I just lost his name.
Bruce Campbell.
Well, Bruce Campbell's the actor. Yeah, that to me, he is Ash. So it's like, that's the kind of hero we need right now. Someone walking around with a chainsaw for a hand.
who's a complete idiot, yet somehow when it comes to fighting the Evil Dead, just seems to inherently know how to do it, despite the fact that he can't get out of his own way.
Yeah.
That's what's great about Ash. He's a total buffoon, but he has one useful skill.
Yeah. I mean, he does unleash the evil in the second one. He's kind of responsible for it when he forgets the words.
If you look at the movie, right, he's really not the hero. Everything bad that happens in that movie is because he's too stupid to remember how to say three simple words.
It's like what Homer said, alcohol, the problem and solution to all life's Kabu, whatever the heck. I forget that.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Oh, Ash. Well, yeah, I forgot to get our boomsticks. But it's okay. I have a deterrent. All I gotta do is post up pictures of me using weapons and like, oh, this guy looks like he's proficient with weaponry. It's like, well, yeah, handles guns. Yeah. I just triggered the anti-gun crowd just now. But believe me, for all those, like, why do you need 500 rounds of bullets anyway? Why do you need 500 rolls of toilet paper? It's like,
It really scares me. What are you doing right now that you need this much toilet paper? Because I don't see much food in your cart. So I'm just a little curious there, but
yeah. Oh man, this stuff just I can't make this stuff.
All I see is liquor and teepee. what are you doing, bud?
Yeah. Oh man, that's the thing. Movies can only get you so far. So there's hopefully some TV shows. Not The Walking Dead, folks. That show, first of all, really goes nowhere, and
it ran its course. But
and Game of Thrones is not gonna get the highs that you want. It's a false lead up to the epic. It's coming. Winter is coming. Well, that's it for winter. Yeah, it ended with at a knife's point. Like, that's it. That's bull. A decades build up for nothing. If anything, it's not a Contagion movie, but it does have like a bioweapon of scare. And I think that's that kind of ties in. And I got some books that I can recommend to people too that I'll have to touch on before we wrap this up. It's The Expanse. You have Amazon Prime, you check that one out. For any sci-fi horror drama with great politics without pushing agendas, that's how you do it. That's what Star Trek wishes it could be. That's what Star Wars wishes it could be. I only seen the first season, but now that Amazon's picked it up, I want to get around to it. And I think it's it was canceled by the Sci-Fi Channel. Sci-Fi Channel of all places. That's kind of why it flew under my radar. It's a real good one. It takes place in the future with the most realistic portrayal of cell phones I've ever seen. The cell phone is actually one piece of transparent either plastic or glass. And the main character played by Thomas Jane, well, one of the main characters, there's a lot of great characters there. One of the main characters played by Thomas Jane is carrying his smartphone around. It's already cracked. So it's like it's an old, broken mess. I'm like, dude, you got an old, yucky phone. It's kind of like what Star Wars did in 1977 to the sci-fi genre. Established stuff that people saw like, ugh, it's junk. But to me, I'm like, dude, that's awesome. He's a detective, arrives to his apartment, unlocks the apartment with his phone. He gets into his apartment, docks it, and when it docks, it's a hologram. I'm like, that's exactly what I've been begging to do. That's what Apple, Google, and Microsoft have been trying to achieve. So like, okay, cool. Where he happens to work, though, is in a space station that acts as a port from an in-between from Earth to other colonized planets, but Earth and Mars are not doing so well, politically speaking. So that's there's always something that's trying to get them to go to war, and the space station is more like a slum. So I think it did a great job establishing something original. And one of the underlying things that's hidden among all this is when political sabotage is kind of putting two cultures against one another. But there's this mysterious bioweapon that nobody knows about that is wreaking havoc, and in of it itself, it is terrifying. Like all the suspense leading up to it, you want to know about it, and then you don't want to know about it. For a show to still be able to do that, that's pretty awesome. So I definitely recommend it for people, especially since it's breaking ground in the space genre, like sci-fi genre.
Nice. Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
I have to ask because you have a military background. For those that don't know, Travis, you have a military background. You serve in the Ranger Battalion. Is that the way to say it, Ranger Battalion?
No, I was in the 82nd, but close.
Yeah, but well, you're a Ranger.
No, actually, I wasn't. But
you weren't a Ranger?
So what about Ranger? I think you invented that somewhere along the line, but that's okay.
So Army Rangers are not the same thing.
No, there's a school and there's a unit. I know I have a friend that was in the Ranger Battalion for a while, and I have a couple friends who went to the who went to Ranger School and got their tab. But alas, I did not go. So
you did not go. Okay, all right. Okay, I thought they were kind of the same thing, just that there's more elite rangers and then it just goes higher up in the ranks.
If you're thinking, it's probably the easiest way, the Black Hawk Down guys, as I like to call them, that's the 75th Ranger Regiment, which has three battalions, and technically falls under Special Operations Command, and they do support missions and their own missions in support of Special Operations Command and work with other Special Operations forces and stuff like that. So.
And when we're talking about Special Operations Fortress, that's where we're entering Delta Force. The
They're technically
fabled Delta
they technically
Force.
fall under kind of their own little section called JSOC, or the Joint Special Operations Command. I guess we can talk about them now. There was a point in time that they really were secret and you were not, but I guess when you do movies and the president openly acknowledges, I guess it's not. It used to be a bad secret. Now it's just okay, fine. We just don't care anymore.
Black Hawk Down blew the lid off that.
Well, because at one point, SEAL Team 6, Delta Force, it was sort of like, of course, everyone knew you were. You can't really keep secrets like that, but you at least pretended to, and you tried not to openly talk about them. They did try to restrict information about them. And I guess we're probably like 15 years, 20 years beyond that now. It's just not, which I know does not make them very happy that they, because for obvious reasons, they do like to keep a low profile. They don't want people seeing about training facilities, tactics, how they do things. Obviously, when you're involved, especially in counterterrorism, you try to keep your it's like playing a poker game. Try to keep your cards close to your chest. So, but yes, especially during the war on terrorism, those guys were over there, and you'd see them. They'd go through your base, or they'd be doing something in your area, or something like that. And there were different little task force that would kind of. That would go around and stuff like that. Remember when I was with the 82nd, we crossed paths with a couple of those task force, or you'd be doing something that you were in the same area and you'd kind of team up to do something with them or something like that.
Like in this time of panic, I think that's why I always feel motivated to watch like heroism or heroism in times of great distress. And I guess that's why I turn to military operations, especially movies that try to highlight like impossible missions and having to tackle them at first, because what else can you do but just go out guns
Like
blazing or
Arnold
whatever.
Schwarzenegger in The Predator. Well, you want to talk about a
Go
survival movie? Fine, go watch him at the end of that movie. That is old school. How to survive in the jungle, make traps out of the. You know what? Go watch that.
why can't why? That's like the one franchise I pretend doesn't exist. It's like it's Predator, that's it. Like just leave it alone.
I will allow the sequel. Because Danny Glover is so awesome. It's not a great movie, but Danny Glover by himself is awesome. He was, I think, fresh off of doing like Lethal Weapon 2 maybe, when he did the sequel to that. And I saw it again at some point. It was one of those where you go, I can't say that was a good movie, but I can't say that I didn't enjoy watching it either. So
Because
it
you
fits
still
in that
feel
kind of.
like, well, okay, we can accept that maybe the predators are having respect for this old man, too old for this. It's like
Yes.
as to run to take out a predator, so like, okay, that's why they would probably let him live. Like I'll let that be the conjecture of
Warrior
why.
culture, it made sense. And then they
But
had to ruin the, well, about the time they got into Predator versus Alien movies is when the franchises well, two birds with one stone. They ruined two franchises for the price of one, so.
well, some would say that thing kind of lost its way with Alien 3, because then there's Alien Resurrection before it got to AVP.
Yes, quite unbelievable when you go back and look at it and you go, David Fincher directed this? And it's like, it's an early movie. We just excuse it.
The
The
poor
studio
guy,
got a.
they threw his name on it. That's the way it seemed. Like you have to fall on the sword here, man. You're taking the shot for this. Like, okay. Yeah, but
a pre-Fight Club, David Fincher.
It's then I like yeah it's like dude when there's just so much out there like well I told you when we were before start recording we watched American Sniper just the moments where there's a moment in that where the SEAL team they walked into an ambush and one of their guys is taken out. It's not, they're not used to one of their guys going down because they're technically so few compared to the presence of Marines that are around, right? And when they're forced to go door to door, that's just like, dude, I'm not going down there. But well, Kyle's one of those that went with the Marines to go door to door. But anyway, they're set up by an ambush. They lose one of their guys and everything goes to hell. So they have to pull back. And when they're pulled back, it's like, look, we got to regroup and regather. And they're sending their team out there. And one of the leaders is like, look, I know none of you guys have to go back out there. But no one was saying like, oh, it's too dangerous. And like, hell no, man, we're going back out there. You know, just because they got to. So like that's kind of what you would need in times like these where you have to look after one another, where, you know, just it's like we're all humans. In this case, we're all Californians, you know. Why are we beating up each other to try to get this? Isn't a freaking Black Friday, man. It's like Black Friday just every day right now.
That's basically what it's Black Friday mode with more hostility.
Yeah, and it's like, it's the end of the world, the end of the world. Look, I got my own opinions about the hysteria, the mass-induced hysteria that I'm calling it. But that's, for those of you that heard me on Off the Rec, I'm not going to hit on that topic again. But it's just like, that's why I turn to, like, I guess, military movies where it's like, dude, you're faced with the impossible and you got to tackle it head on. And like, what do? You work as a unit? Or it's like, all right, it's every man for himself. You know, like if you have like a predator picking you all up, that's one thing. But when you have if you guys could come together and realize that, look, there it is. We got to take on this mission. Then yeah, you go out as a unit.
So there is a sense of camaraderie. And you can find this pretty much in any military movie. Like a lot of people, I was a huge fan of the Band of Brothers series. Which I think well displayed that it's almost a stereotype now, but stereotype does not mean untrue. The idea that you come from all these disparate backgrounds and come together as a unit, and it's kind of a cliche now. And I go, well, it's cliche, but it's true. It's one of those rare circumstances in the armed forces where you do kind of realize that you're from backgrounds where you can look at each other and go, you know, you're a good friend of mine now. But if I had known you back on the street when I was doing this, you're a suburbs guy, I was in a gang in LA and had to join the army, kind of go to jail, kind of, you know, all these different scenarios, going, you and I would have never been friends. In fact, we might have even been enemies. And you can readily acknowledge that and move on. It is a very unique bond. And like I said, you do recognize that the circumstances brought you together. And you're like, yeah, on the outside, I probably never would have been friends with you, even if I had crossed paths with you.
Yeah, and I think some of those films that, like in the case of miniseries like Band of Brothers, go watch that, folks. When they show like the hardships of training together, and when you all overcome it together, to say, "Wait, we all made it this far," like you've proven yourself, and then really battle tested, it's kind of you drawn more close together. I think that's pretty awesome. You know, it's it really shows you how close you get through conflict, not with one another, but with having to take on a common enemy. I said I have literature to get to, and I will, because it's all coming like full circle and all this. Because before watching American Sniper, I told my wife, "This is one movie I remember seeing. They had a really great montage of the training stuff." And because I told her I'm reading Alone at Dawn, I'm like, I think it was Lone Survivor. That's the one war movie that I enjoyed the first time, but then I'm like, wasn't half of that movie false though? It never happened. And I'm like, oh yeah, it didn't happen like that. So I'm like, oh, that's why I can't watch it again, because then I gotta, you know, putting my disbelief to one side to try to watch the rest of it. But like the lead up to the village sequence, it's technically for the most part, it's what happened, and they don't even show how many times these guys actually did go down the hill. So I'm like, okay. But the opening scene is a montage of the SEALs training and what it means, like, all right, like just to shame you because you didn't make it, it's like you ring this bell three times and put your helmet down, you're out. You know, it's like, okay. But then when you see a line of them doing that, it's like, oh man, you know, like one guy, all right, it's a shame, and then kind of doing it like one at a time. But then when you have a line of quitters, like, oh dude, man, this is like hardcore. And I think that was not a movie sequence, that looked like it was a documentary sequence. These guys weren't actors that were doing it. They were actually going through it, because none of the characters show up in that montage. Like the no swim sequence, you can't swim. like, oh snap, because I was reading about how much harder it is for the combat controllers. Like, oh dude, what the flip. So it gave me context into something that you talked about, like building camaraderie through training and conflict, battle tested and all that, because Band of Brothers shows are great. What about those that continue to serve thereafter? I think a good moment that I took for granted, but then every time I watch it, I'm like, dude, it's amazing how in sync these guys are. The one you haven't seen, 13 hours. These guys, they're basically mercenaries, guns for hire by the CIA. Six guys, complete different backgrounds. They come from SEALs. They come from Ranger battalions. They come from, oh my goodness, what are those other guys? I think one of them was Delta Force. And another one's just hardened Marines, like just six of these guys, you know, just like basically like trying to put an orchestra together from different parts and pieces, and they all mesh together. It's like, yeah, they have their personalities. No one was like not liking the other. They just come together. They've all been through the same thing, and they're all there for a reason. So there's none of this like, oh, I hate your politics. None of that nonsense. When a time comes, they're all like, let's go. And I was like, dude, that's everything you just mentioned, that whole growth, that's the maturity level. It's already there. These guys already know it. That's why they have that respect for one another. Yeah, there might be like this one-off things like, oh, he's from that branch of the military. Oh, you know, it's like, that's just a running joke. But that's as far as it goes, you know? Like, there's always that, everything else is like, dude, we're here for the same thing. And that's awesome. And I really like that. I was going to try to bring this full circle. We touched on Zack Snyder. We touched on like the zombie movies and all that. But what I'm hoping is, as everyone comes together to fight a common enemy, you know, which novel did this? If for the popular medium of comic books or graphic novels, I'm sorry, folks. Watchmen, it did it. It just that in that case was a practical joke that tricked the world into peace. And in this one, I don't know, was it a practical joke? Was it a misdirect by somebody to get this thing out there and scare everybody into a common cause? I don't know, because it's dividing everybody.
not working if that was the that's a failed experiment.
Like the
Stanford prison experiment. We need to call this one, you know, cut that one off.
Yeah, but we'll see. But for in terms of literature, you mentioned Stephen King's The Stand, and Stephen King, dude, shut the hell up. The guy's watching the whole coronavirus task force. The first thing he decides to tweet about, they're all white people. They're all white males. You didn't see the woman talk first? She didn't identify as a man when she went up there to talk. And then there's other colored people that went up there. But whatever. That's what Stephen King thinks about. Oh. Anyway.
Well, if you've read his books, you already know he's a strange guy. So I give him a pass. I figure he's not all there. Anyway,
I know
he has some Freudian issues. If anyone who's read the book it knows what I'm talking about.
Exactly, and if we say any more, I'll get censored and probably demonetized too.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that.
No, it's not just you, but yeah, two great literature, especially for those Batman fans. These are two great. Actually, there's one series I never read it. There's V, The Last Man, or was it Y? I owe you guys that one. I'm going to have to look that one up. The Last Man on Earth kind of thing. But in terms of Contagion, not really a good storyline for the Batman arc, but that was a Contagion one that was talked about. They kind of tried to tug at the heartstrings that some of the main characters got a Contagion. That, not so good. But it has a great lead up to one of the best story arcs ever written for Batman since Nightfall. Nightfall is when Bane is introduced and beats up the bat, breaks his back. Contagion is kind of like the prelude to what is called No Man's Land. Because after Contagion is Cataclysmic. Cataclysmic is a seismic earthquake that destroys Gotham and cuts it off from the rest of the world. The survivors are then forced to fend for themselves, and over five novels thereafter, after Cataclysm, it's basically gang warfare in Gotham, where different rogues gallery villains take control of different patches of land, and you have to, barter systems have introduced all these different things, and Batman trying to restore order, and the police making their own gang, so to speak. But it's No Man's Land that kind of, even though it's like, okay, it's like Batman's in it, it's a very well grounded story about what happens in cataclysmic effects such as that. Because one of the other things people aren't really talking about are the weird earthquakes happening in the East Coastline. And like the five earthquakes that happened in Tennessee and the Carolinas over the weekend. No one's talking about that. It's like, wait, what? So like, wait, contagion before the earthquake? So like, it's Batman. But if you watch just one novel, though, it's called Tales of the Multiverse, because it uses the characters from that are established and puts them in a whole fictitious setting that's away from the storyline, away from canon, so they can do whatever they want. And it's about these mysterious deaths of these homeless, which later on, they're not just homeless, because they're being found. I'm going to get graphic here now, so I don't know if I should really delve that into the detail. The point is, they're found dead. And it's just a graphic, grisly scene. And the police, they investigate it, but they're not too concerned about this. Let's say it's like a Victorian era times, but they have TVs for some reason. So it's kind of like the extraordinary League of Gentlemen type of scenario, where they have advanced technology in a Victorian setting. So the police investigate it, but because they're homeless, no one really cares. What nobody realizes is that vampires have been feeding on the homeless, but doing this to hide the evidence of what's being done, so it looks like someone's just killing indiscriminately. So they're covering their tracks. So by the time it's discovered that there's a horde of vampires that have been living in the sewers and they're ready to surface, it's too late. And Batman, or Bruce Wayne, is having these weird dreams, hallucinating that he's being visited by a vampire's female, and it's just weird hallucinations. What he didn't realize is that it was real, and she was very slowly turning him not so much into a vampire, but being endued and that whatever with the powers, the strength of a vampire, so he'll be ready to take on Dracula. The problem is, he needs sustenance eventually. That's the side effect of it. So that's the story of what happens to Batman. It's called Tales of the Multiverse. I think it might be Batman Vampire. Not for the faint of heart. It's very graphic. A very graphic storyline.
Like Punisher comic level violence?
I would say more. Well, it's a hard R, like for violence and gore. Yeah. And especially when the Joker gets involved, because the Joker has to get involved. And it's fascinating how that's handled, because one would argue that Joker wins. And like, fascinating. But anyway, it's a really interesting explanation of how a contagion can kind of creep up on you. That's kind of what kind of gave me the shivers. I'm like, dude, I've seen this kind of stuff be covered in the news and just be kind of put on the wayside. So it's an awesome comic that I recommend. And for those anime fans out there, there's plenty of stuff out there, but Attack on Titan is the one you got to watch. It brings everything from military to survivalist to a pandemic to certain death and zombie stuff. And in these cases are titans, human eating titans. You know, it's, oh my goodness, that is a show. That is, and that's some of the best storytelling you'll ever find on any medium. Even if you have to read the subtitles, doesn't matter. It's awesome. And great music too. So, yeah. Anyway, any more recommendations from you? I've been babbling on for a bit.
That's probably all I can really think of off the top of my head there, especially for that genre. But yeah, definitely for those of you that never got around to seeing the original Night of the Living Dead, this is probably as good an opportunity and excuse to do that as you're ever going to need. Everybody should see it once. I know for some people going, oh, is that the one in black and white? I don't want to go see it. No, trust me. Go watch it once. It's short. I want to say it's probably less than an hour and a half. You know, mm-hmm, yeah. Watch it. You can watch it after dinner before you go to bed. Say that you saw it. Tremendous piece of kind of challenging late 1960s cinema that broke a lot of ground for things that would come. Not less the fact that it had a leading black actor, which at the time was a big deal. especially for someone that was not a major Hollywood star. It was just I don't know what the guy actually ended up doing after that movie.
That's true. I haven't heard about the actor thereafter. That's all he was known for, huh? Yeah. Every time I think about that film, though, I only watched it once. It might have been in fragments too. It was like almost like a safe for TV kind of movie nowadays, because I've seen elements of like a more watered down version of it on television.
You, because it's so tame in comparison to what you can show at 8 o'clock, they can basically show it unedited for the majority of it. I want to say at the time, because they didn't have I think back then you only had like three ratings. You had G, PG, and then whatever they used to consider adult, or X. And I seem to remember it had distribution problems because of the rating board, because they couldn't get because that movie could probably get a PG rating at that time. The subject matter alone and how they were showing it probably was too much for the MPAA. But
yeah, and I think back then, I think the 60s, I think the Catholic Church still had control over that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Enough in the 70s, because that was like the porn revolution and whatnot.
Yes, and you know, here we are several decades later, and we still have these odd, you know, it's like this NC-17 business, but you know, an R movie, you know, is basically what used to be an NC-17. PG-13 is the old R. Every now and then I'll watch a movie and I'll kind of look at the rating later and I'll go, gosh, that was PG-13. I was like, I don't think they could. But then again, I grew up in the 80s when, as everyone knows, an R-rated movie was marketed to kids. So all the great R-rated movies of the 80s had the best toys, the best action figures, a McDonald's Happy Meal deal to go along with it. I had the RoboCop action figure. It had the little cap thing that like it shot out and had like the smoke would come out of it. It was probably a fire hazard. You probably couldn't give that to a kid now, but purposely marketed towards kids. Yeah, it was amazing. It was a special time and place to be alive.
Right. Oh man, yeah, those were the days. And Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Those were the good old days.
That's
and
right.
Indiana Jones, yeah.
Yeah, most of the trilogy, you know, in the 80s, same with Back to the Future. I can remember I saw Back to the Future Part 3 in the theater, I think, with however old I was, my first grade class, second grade class, something like that. I want to say that we all went. I have this hazy recollection of running around the theater. I don't think I really watched it from my seat, but I do remember I went to go see it. So I think my parents were sitting in the back, and this is also 80s parenting, so you know, you didn't have to sit with your parents. This, as long as you were within like a sight distance, you could go sit up front, and they went somewhere else.
There
so.
He is. Yeah, awesome. We need those kind of memories again.
Yeah, we do. We have to impart that to the younger generation.
That's what's really hard nowadays. Going to the movies isn't so much fun when people just get agitated for anything. It's just that's what asks the division. But for those of you that are enjoying this kind of programming while you're quarantined at home, there's or isolated, not just quarantined, but that's kind of why, like, you know what, I think it's the time to bring this up again. And I think this kind of thing to kick off conversations for Contagion and stuff is like, why not? It's like, it's the topic. I have a friend that's I say she's doing biochem. She wants to get into the field of in the medical field, like become a heart surgeon and all that stuff. But she sent me today a Facebook post about like this on this vegetable that has a particular strain in there, and they have the microscopic bacteria. It looks like a worm, and it looks just like this worm in this horror series called The Strain that was on FX. That's another one you guys check out. It doesn't do justice to the novels. I read them all, I would know, but it does handle the fallout better in the context of the show, which I appreciated, because it felt a little rushed in the books. It was written by Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan.
Oh, perfect.
So Guillermo del Toro did do the first few episodes when he produced that one. He was writing this when he was supposed to be doing The Hobbit, but because MGM was having the delays and it didn't know they were going to end up doing it anyway, he spent 2 years down there in New Zealand. So he ended up spending time on the script for The Hobbit and was writing this book with Chuck Hogan. And then he just left that project. So while he was waiting to pick up a project here, because he had a several ties, he basically came back with Pacific Rim. So before he came out with that, he launched the book. So that was great. He was also working on The Mountains of Madness. Oh, that would have been awesome, man. I think that's an H.G. Wells story. The Mountains of Madness, about this expedition in South in Antarctica to find these unexplained things that have been found by this test group of scientists in 1920 something. And it was just an all-around great story. Like, just the mystery, the eeriness surrounding these things that they found, that they don't know what they are, was just uber creepy. And the thing is, it's a short novel. That's what I found a little interesting. Like, well, this novel's super short. And
so it sounds like the premise to John Carpenter's The Thing. Isn't there like an Antarctic research group, and that's where the wasn't that the premise?
But that one turns to full-blown horror in the Thing. So for those of you that are willing to stomach just really graphic content, check out John Carpenter, The Thing, not the remake, the original. Just
absolutely.
Remember, the 80s was no holds bar, so my goodness, you'll never see defibrillators the same way again.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. Classic scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but this one, I guess I don't know if John Carpenter got inspiration from this. It didn't have anything like that in this one. In fact, of the specimens that were found in the whole entire novel are deceased. So it's the whole creepiness of having to go investigate the source and the origin of it. And I feel like I will spoil the book if I say any more, so I won't say any more, but I could tell you off the air if you're interested. I don't want to get hit by those, like, you spoil everything. It's like, sorry, yo, I gave you a spoiler at the beginning, man. And Star Wars not spoiling, that's a known fact, so I don't care. But I will give more spoiler warnings in the future for those of you that are easily triggered. Anyway, dude, Travis, it's fun talking movies, and I know we're going to be doing this again. But we'll wrap it up for the audience at this point, because I don't know how long we've been rambling on here. But yeah,
for a while.
it's been fun.
Hopefully everybody's still awake out there. So.
Oh, they got nothing else to do, man. They're
That's true. You're stuck. We're sorry. You're stuck with us.
They finished binge watching. So like, what do we watch now?
Well, now they have a list. Now they know what to go do. So.
Exactly.
Night of the Living Dead. The Thing.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead. Oh, we didn't mention Zombieland. That one has a list of rules to follow. So
you know what? I can't believe. Yeah, I'm surprised that we didn't bring that up. And it's got Woody Harrelson in it, so you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the second one a lot more than I thought I would. I found myself laughing a lot more in that movie. So I do recommend Zombieland too. I think it's a good follow up. And yeah, you know, I'll close it out with this. I don't know why horror movies tend to have a more conservative spin to them. That's fascinating to me. It's like that's the only way they can project their message.
It's weird because they're usually made by very liberal filmmakers. So it's like an inside, it's an inside joke or something.
Go figure, huh? Yeah. Alrighty then, man. Well, we're going to wrap it up here, everybody. Thank you so much for watching. Links to the main show are down below. If you like this kind of format, by all means, chime in the YouTube comments. Be polite to please like, share, subscribe, stay in the know. And if you'd like more of this, we might keep this up maybe once a month. We'll see how this goes. And I have other friends that I also want to talk movies that have different backgrounds as well. So we'll all get to know each other along the way, and you'll see where our interests come in. But I'll be the mainstay for the most part, especially since I got a lot of interests, and I can bridge the gaps for some individuals. Anyway, hey, Travis, thanks so much for joining in on this one, and we'll connect on the next one.
Cool. Thanks for having me.